Hello, and welcome to Power Pros Podcast, Episode 24, The Sacred Stones. I am one of your co-hosts, the Hoff, Chris Hoffman, and with me is my red robotic dog, Chris Slate.
Hello.
And we are back once again to talk about Nintendo. Our big topic this week is going to be the burning Nintendo questions. We're going to answer a lot of, common questions that come up in the world of Nintendo fandom. But before we do that, we're going to kick it off with the news. And to be honest, this looked like it was shaping up to be a pretty slow Nintendo news week. There just hadn't been a whole lot happening. But then, all of a sudden, boom! Nintendo announced there was going to be a Nintendo Direct very, very soon. It's going to be about 2 days away as we are recording this. It's kind of a shame that we're not going to be recording it right afterwards, but we'll talk about all that stuff next week. And regardless of that, hey, we've been waiting a long time for a Nintendo Direct, and this is pretty darn exciting.
Yeah, it really is. And for anyone who does download and listen to this podcast straight away, it we usually put it up on a Wednesday, and the Direct's going to be on the Thursday on the 12th, I believe, at 2 p.m.
Yep, 2 p.m.
So,
Pacific.
2 p.m. Pacific. So, yeah, everybody will definitely be checking that out. And, when I first heard about this, I thought, oh, okay, we're going to get, Mario Tennis and, Animal Crossing Amiibo Festival, one last chance to kind of pimp those games. And to be honest, I'm not very excited about either one. But the more I thought about it, the more I thought, wait a minute, this could actually be a pretty amazing Nintendo Direct.
It could be. I mean, it could really go either way. I'm hoping that it's not just going to be talking about the holiday games that aren't out yet, like the ones you mentioned, and Xenoblade. Hopefully, they're talking about a whole bunch of things that have yet to be announced, and maybe they're talking about more DLC for Smash, more DLC for Mario Maker, and things of that nature.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing is, they had even said at the investor meeting, not long ago, that there were still games for this year that had yet to be announced.
Yeah, that's
and
right.
And we saw one of the games on their release schedule that was still scheduled for this year but didn't have a date was Project Guard, the old E3 demo that kind of became its own thing, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be very surprised if we didn't actually finally get the official reveal of that and see what kind of final form it's taken. Probably a digital-only release at this point. Also Twilight Princess HD, there's been a lot of kind of evidence pointing toward that being a real thing, and if it is going to come out in time for the holidays, it kind of has to be mentioned during this Direct.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, of all the things that could be at this Nintendo Direct, that would probably excite me the most because I love that Zelda game and I'm a big fan of the franchise in general, so that would be pretty darn cool.
Yeah, and like you mentioned, on DLC, they could, they've continued to release Splatoon things, but they could talk about maybe some more ambitious mm-hmm. Splatoon plans, maybe kind of the next level as we go into the new year even.
Mm-hmm.
It might be a little soon for Mario Maker because I think Tezuka, the producer and the director, whose name escaped me at the moment, were interviewed recently and asked about future DLC plans and seemed to indicate that, after this last update that just came out with checkpoints and such, they were open to doing more, but didn't seem to have any concrete plans or timetable for what they might do.
It might not be a DLC update, but maybe they're just going to talk about, the new, special creators making their special courses and the new costumes that go with those. So maybe it'll be something along those lines.
That's true. There's still, I think, about 7 costume slots unaccounted for mm-hmm. since the update. So, that could very well be true. I would love to see some brand new Miyamoto design levels if he's had the time to do that. And then also, I don't know if you saw, but Nintendo of Europe just announced that they're bringing the Badge Arcade, I think
yeah,
it's called over
there.
Yeah, I
certainly did, yeah.
Yeah, over from Japan, where it's been out there for months.
Mm-hmm.
It
came out a long time ago, and I was expecting, this seems like an obvious thing to bring out to the West. Why not do it? And it, sort of disappeared and seemed like it wasn't ever going to happen. And, here we go. It is definitely coming to Europe, and maybe it'll be coming to North America when Nintendo Direct decides to unveil it. Who knows?
Yeah, maybe NOA decided to make it part of the Direct just to add more in there. And to be honest, I don't know that it's in, I mean, it's out in the rest of the world, so I want it out here. But it seems like it would just be a huge money sink. Just the, it's essentially like a crane game. And
you
find little, you kind of pay a little pink rabbit some money and you get to go fishing for basically little sprite icons that you can use to decorate mm-hmm. your home screen
mm-hmm. yep, exactly.
Of the 3DS. So, you know, the retro lover in me loves to, for the chance to grab all these old, like, pixel art Marios and stuff that they've got in there. But it also just seems like a bottomless pit to throw my money down.
It totally could be. And that's why I figured it was going to come out here, you know, several months ago, because they're like, yeah, we'll just put this out and it'll, you know, basically, you know, just cause people to just throw endless amounts of cash at us. So why not do it? But you know, they've been taking their time.
Yep. And I guess I'd agree with you that the thing I would get excited about the most, that's kind of within the realm of possibly happening, is Twilight Princess HD. But pretty much equally excited, I feel like now may be a good time, like you said, like you hinted at with DLCs for Smash potentially, to at least get word on what happened, you know, what the results were from the official fan balloting that closed last month. If not a full on, you know, character or characters available, you know, before the holidays. It has been, I don't know, was it last June that Roy and Ryu came out? It's been a while.
I'm not sure exactly when it was, but yeah, we're just about on the, you know, it's been more than a year since the 3DS version came out and almost a year since the Wii U version came out. So now seems like a really good time for another fresh update.
Yeah, if you're Nintendo and you're, you know, earlier this year, presumably sitting down to kind of plan out, you know, your business for the remainder of the year, you definitely want to schedule it so that, you know, maybe you've got a significant big, you know, character DLC drop for Smash in early, you know, more in the middle of the year, which I guess would have been the last round, and then one right before the holidays is just another great way to try to add some money, squeeze in a bit more revenue before the, you know, before you reach the end of the you know, shopping year. So. I'd be surprised if we don't see a new character reveal, which would be pretty exciting. And maybe it's not one that was, maybe they haven't had time yet to kind of act on what people voted on, but it could still be just like Roy and Rue, another one that they'd planned themselves, maybe an inkling or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I will cross my fingers for that. I mean, whatever they do, you know, they have to realize that, you know, fans have kind of been, you know, rabidly waiting for something. It's just been so long since the Nintendo Direct happened, and there hasn't been a whole lot of new and interesting stuff announced. You know, people really are expecting something big out of this. I hope they can deliver.
Yeah. And one last thing I thought is kind of a no-brainer is you know, there's so much Amiibo coming out this month. You know, they've got a whole new wave for Animal Crossing. And then
there
you've
is
got
indeed
Mewtwo and Falco and Mega Yarn Yoshi. I'd be surprised if they didn't at least kind of summarize all that stuff as a last chance to just kind of make people aware of what's coming. And if we're lucky, maybe they'll give a little hint at Amiibo for next year, maybe with some Amiibo that might work with Star Fox or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe we'll start to see the Amiibo of Ryu and Roy and some of the other DLC guys.
Yeah, that'd make a lot of sense.
You know, speaking of Amiibo, like you said, Mewtwo comes out this Friday, but I managed to get my hands on him a little bit early.
Oh, so, you son of a bitch. You've done it again.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm checking out Mewtwo right now. And, you know, it's all right. It's not one of my favorite Amiibo. You know, he's very monochromatic, you know, with this, you know, sort of, you know, off-white, mildly purplish body, and then, like, this big purple crotch that turns into his tail. And, you know, this guy just, you know, spreads his legs really wide to show off that big old purple crotch. It's a little bit disturbing.
What in the world are you doing? You're, like, perving on that amiibo.
It's not my fault. He's the one who's doing it. At least I'm pretty sure that's his tail.
You don't want to know.
But he's a big amiibo. He doesn't even really fit on his stand. Like, his feet are barely even touching it. They're like spread off all out to the side, and his tail is, you know, pretty darn huge. Again, I think it's his tail. But you know, it is very simple as far as the deco goes, just a couple of colors. You know, it's you know, of course, looks, you know, perfect to the in-game model for the trophy. But yeah, it's a little bit a little bland compared to some of the other ones. Still happy I got it, but that is my opinion of this guy.
Well, I believe I was able to get a pre-order in for him. That's the one at I got at Best Buy yesterday, wasn't it?
Yep, that's the one.
Yeah, you were right. You were sitting right next to me when that happened. Yeah.
Well, I told you about it. I said, "Hurry, quick, do this."
Yeah. Yeah, and it wasn't working at first, but I managed to get it in, so hopefully it holds up. I also did receive a brand new amiibo in the mail yesterday, a Famicom flavored Japanese Rob.
Oh, very nice. I got mine as well, but I really haven't had a chance to look at it much yet.
You know, that's a sad thing with a lot of these Amiibo, and this one in particular, because it's just a color variant of one I already had. I finally got it in. I was thrilled to open the box. Then I just kind of took a quick look at it and put it away on a shelf somewhere, never to be seen again.
Yeah, this one, if you, you know, put it into Mario Maker, probably wouldn't even unlock anything new, because it would just be the same as the other one. As the
probably
American
wouldn't.
Version.
But if there are any other completionists out there, or anyone who just has a special, you know, a hankering for a Rob with burgundy arms, they're starting to pop up now pretty frequently on Amazon. You can get
them. Yeah, the prices are continuing
resellers.
To go down.
Yeah, it's not bad at all. I've even started reconsidering my stance on not getting the Skylanders / Amiibos, purely based on the assumption that some point after Christmas, I'll be able to find, you know, Donkey Kong and Bowser, you know,
Disco
just
Donkey
buy them.
Kong.
Yeah, Disco Donkey Kong and Crazy Eyes Bowser, somewhere on their own, you know, own outside of those expensive packs through eBay or, you know, buying them used at GameStop or something like that. If I can get those for cheap and I don't have to buy the whole game or anything, then I may go back on my word a little bit and include those in.
If I can get those cheap, I might just buy them and set them on fire. We shall see. The only other bit of news I wanted to mention was that last week, a very, very good game was released in stores, and that is Shovel Knight. You know, previously, it was only a digital title on Wii U and 3DS and competing consoles, but last week, the physical version came out, and, you know, I decided to double dip, or actually, I guess, triple dip in this case, and pick up the physical version for 3DS. And if you have been holding out on this for some reason, if you really only like physical media, if you don't have online capabilities, in which case I'm not sure how on earth you'd be listening to this podcast, go out and buy this game because it is fantastic. It's an excellent retro-style 2D pixel art action game. It's absolutely brilliant. It's lots of fun. It's got everything that the download version did. It's even got butt mode, which is, you know, one of the greatest things in the history of video games.
I second that. I think this is an amazing game. I think obviously if you played games back in the old days and you love the retro style, it certainly you know, pulls at your nostalgia heartstrings. But I also think that unlike, you know, a lot of the actual, you know, old school 2D platformers, you know, this is a modern game meant, you know, built, you know, still with modern sensibilities in mind. So mm-hmm. you don't have a lot of those, maybe the frustrations that you'd had. I mean, there's, you know, first of all, you know, the game has a fully adequate save system. And
well, you have like infinite lives too, and, you know, fairly decent checkpoints. So you're never going to be like, you know, sent back all the way to the beginning with, you know, no lives and no continues or anything like that.
And various difficulty modes. So while the game is, you know, it can be challenging, it's very, very doable and isn't, mm-hmm. you know, bang your head against the wall hard like a lot of the really, the actual old NES games. So
yeah, the challenge feels just about right for a modern game, though.
Yeah, so I'd feel like even if you're not normally the one who, you know, has a special fondness for big sprite graphics, I think if you like platformers and action games at all, you know, you should give this one a try. And how much is the physical copy? Is it the same as the digital?
It's actually a little bit more. It's $25, but it does come with a glorious full-color manual. You know, Nintendo doesn't do manuals anymore. A lot of publishers don't do manuals anymore. You know, some of them still do, but this one is great. You know, it's very retro feeling. It feels nice and thick, like, you know, some of the old NES manuals were, with, you know, all the, you know, colorful enemy art and stuff in there. You know, pictures for all the weapons and characters and all that good stuff. So that's one of the reasons I wanted to get and support the physical release.
Come on, $25. You got to go get that. I'm going to go get it. And I already own the Wii U version digitally. That's just amazing. I mean, that's one of the best values you'll get all year. That is a really, really good game.
Mm-hmm. For sure. So I think that actually does it for our news today. So, you know, we're going to take a little intermission. And when we come back, we will answer those burning Nintendo questions. We'll be right back. All right, we are back, and we are here to talk about those burning Nintendo questions. You know, some of those, you know, long-running, you know, sort of, you know, hot-button Nintendo topics that, you know, people might get very passionate about. And, you know, there can be a lot of these things, but we're not going to spend too much time on any one question. We'll just try to, you know, give some brief answers and then move along to the next one. Sound good to you, Mr. Slate?
Sounds good. This is like, you know, Marvel's Captain America versus Iron Man Civil War. We've got to pick a side.
All right.
We have to make a stand on these hot button issues.
Okay, let's do it then. And our first question for today, should Link talk?
That's a good one right out of the bat. All right, I'll answer first since you asked the question. No, but everyone else should.
I completely agree. I would give the exact same answer. I think that the Link should stay the silent protagonist. You know, that lets you, you know, project onto him, as Nintendo, you know, always says. But yeah, there's no reason to hold back on the voice acting for all the rest of the characters, because, you know, that whole reasoning doesn't apply.
No, I mean, video games is, you know, it's not a book. It's not where you're imagining the whole thing and you know, half of the experience is kind of how you interpret what's written. You're being presented with a very specific visual, you know, imagery. You know, there's audio for the rest of it. And, you know, if you can tell a good story with voice acting and, you know, movies and plenty of other, you know, countless other games, I don't know why it can't work with Zelda. And I'm not entirely convinced that a Zelda with a talking Link wouldn't work.
Mm-hmm.
But I do feel like it's playing a little bit safe to say, let's just presume that he is talking. Everyone else kind of understands him to be talking, even if we don't hear it. Occasionally, we might see some kind of little text option. We get to choose whether he says basically this or that.
Right.
But we don't need to hear him talking. But when the whole game is silent, it really feels weird in 2015.
Kind of archaic, yeah.
It does. It really. I feel like there's so much more that could bring those worlds to life if the characters that you encounter actually talked to you.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I think it's time to crank up those production values and add full-on voice acting to everybody except Link.
Agreed.
Okay, next question. Should Nintendo's online game support voice chat?
I will say, this is a bit more of a personal preference, but I will say yes, but only for people who are on your friends list.
Well, hot dang. I, again, completely agree with you.
Because, you
maybe
know,
maybe not entirely 100% agree with you. It should only be the friends list, but I think they should totally have online voice chat. But then there should be, you know, you just, you know, turn it off. You know, if you want to turn it off and you don't want to just talk to, you know, some schmo that you don't know, yeah, turn it off. Maybe just restrict it to the friends list, or maybe just make it a toggle for when you're not doing friends lists.
Yeah, I have no interest in diving into that kind of, the kind of Xbox Live cesspool where, you know, you're sitting there playing Call of Duty with a bunch of guys and they're all just yelling, you know, racial slurs and obscenities. Or even if they're on good behavior, I just don't, what do I have to say to these people? I mean, sometimes, okay, if I'm playing Triforce Heroes online with people, being able to talk to them still would be better than being able to, you know, trying to figure out how to communicate via like emoticons or essentially. But that's just not me. I like a certain amount of privacy when I'm playing games. I'm not looking to socialize necessarily unless it is with people who are actually my friends. So for friends, there's no reason at all not to do it. Absolutely none. And if you wanted to open it up to everyone and you could opt out, maybe. But then I feel like depending on the game, there's still pressure to opt in. Like if I didn't want to speak during Triforce Heroes, but the other two people were speaking, they'd just be pissed at me. And so, I don't know, it creates a weird imbalance. So I guess, you know, I'm not 100% against everyone being able to do it. It really depends on your personality and how you like to play. But I think we can agree there's absolutely no reason that you shouldn't be allowed to do voice chat with people that are on your friends list. No reason whatsoever. There's no danger to it. There's no chance that an adult's going to, you know, say inappropriate things to a minor. And it's all, you know, in your control in the first place.
Yeah, I feel like whenever they come up with an excuse, like with Zelda, it's just some, you know, total cop-out. There's really no reason why you shouldn't be able to just, you know, talk with your friends or even the other players in that case. I mean, that is, it is a co-op game. The whole point is to communicate and, you know, work with each other, and to just add, you know, these extra barriers to that just doesn't make any sense.
No, not at all.
So, you know, I think Nintendo is, again, something where they need to just get with the times and be like, hey, you know, we have to add this. This is sort of a crucial function to an online co-op game.
It's also a cultural issue, I think, because
I think it might be.
Just anecdotally speaking, whenever I've played online where voice chat was possible, at night, traditionally when I'm you know, a lot of these games, when I'm playing against a lot of people from Japan due to the time difference, they almost always, if they have the option, they've had the voice chat muted. I don't think that's something that culturally they're as up for as we are here in the West. So, you know, but Nintendo's kind of recognized that their biggest market is here in the U.S. and they can't let, you know, maybe Japanese preferences, if that is indeed true, kind of dictate their whole global strategy.
Yeah, hopefully it's something they will, you know, finally decide to add in on a regular basis. I will say that, you know, there were a couple times, you know, playing Xbox where I've, you know, been, you know, stuck chatting with people who I didn't really want to chat with, and I just unplugged my darn headset and like, you know what, to heck with them. It's not my problem. And it's like I was playing, you know, something that really required, you know, close co-op. It was, you know, all arcade stuff, you know, very arcadey, just, you know, punch the bad guy in the face sort of thing.
Right.
And, you know, I didn't need to strategize. So I didn't feel bad at all that, you know, I just sort of muted these people and didn't have to deal with them. And, you know, I would do the same thing on Nintendo if, you know, I was playing with people who ended up being a bunch of jerks. But, yeah, they gotta fix that. Regardless of that, you know, occasionally being an issue you'll have to deal with.
Yep.
Okay, on to the next one. Should there be a Mario movie? A new Mario movie? We already know there was a bad old Mario movie. Should there be a new Mario movie?
And presumably, I mean, there have been rumors to this effect, but presumably a Mario movie today would be some big CG affair. You know, you look at what they've done, Sony is doing with the Ratchet and Clank CG film, and, you know, that looks all right. But I would say for Mario... No, I think I just think that first of all, Mario's voice is very much meant to be little, you know, blips and yahoos and stuff. I don't think you could take it in real dialogue for an hour and a half, 2 hours. And I don't think you want to go in there and change Mario and how he is and how he speaks and how he sounds, because that's such a part of his brand identity. And I guess mostly it's not that there's no chance it could work. I just think it would be very hard.
It would definitely be very hard.
And I think it runs the chance of damaging the brand, of damaging the character, and more important, and more specifically, I think it runs the chance of making it look very kiddie and very much, you know, Mario can come across in certain games, especially some of the sports titles, as being like, wow, this is really made for children. And then in the best examples, like Mario Galaxy, even though it's a cartoony game, it still very much, you know, feels in the spirit of like an all ages title. But I think that'd be a really hard balance to strike in a film. What do you think?
I agree. It would be very, very difficult, but I'm going to say yes, there should be. I think it is worth them trying. And, you know, I think given the right talent involved, that they could come up with something good, you know, get Pixar involved. You know, they can do amazing things. You know, they have made people cry over what toys are doing on the screen. So if you got, you know, talent of that level, which I know wouldn't be an easy feat, but if you could get the talent on that level, you could maybe do something amazing and beyond our expectations.
Yeah, it'd be tricky because, I mean, obviously Pixar, you know, has their own, you know, they do their own stuff. And you know,
yeah,
Disney.
Plus Nintendo is kind of in bed with Universal already.
Yeah, and Disney does their own stuff. I mean, but I like I said, I think... I mean, I would be curious to see it. I would be, if they announced something, I would be excited about it. I would want
to
hear more
about
it.
I'd like
to
see them give it a shot.
But I'd be very nervous about it.
And, yeah, you know, so would I.
And we saw what the last Mario Brothers movie did to Mario. Although I guess you wouldn't argue that it really damaged the brand or anything, but it certainly did stink up the place.
It did.
I don't know. I'd be really curious and excited to see it if it happened, but... logically, I would just worry that it could do, you know, it is much more likely to do harm rather than good.
It is, but, you know, I have faith. I think they would find the right talent if they were going to make it happen. I don't think they would put out garbage. I think they would handle it carefully and make sure something good was delivered.
Well, we disagree on that one, but not by a lot.
All right, next question. Should Nintendo offer a paid online service along the lines of PlayStation Plus and Xbox Live? And since you jumped in with the last few, I'll try to answer this one first. I'm going to say no on this one. Because Nintendo is, you know, kind of, you know, late to the party in the online game, you know, they're really playing catch up and trying to prove that they can do it as well as the other guys. Like we said, they don't even have, you know, voice chat in their games. I don't think the time is right yet for them to offer some sort of paid service. And, you know, the other guys that do have it, you know, part of their paid service is, you know, lots of free games. And, you know, at the rate Nintendo puts games out, I think that would also be really, really hard for them to do. And it could end up harming them in the long run. If people are just like, oh, yeah, everything eventually is going to be free on here. It just comes out a year late. Then, you know, I think some people would, you know, be inclined to just not buy the software. So I would say at this point in time, it's just something that doesn't make sense, isn't feasible. They should work on, you know, having a free service, because, you know, that'll be more attractive for, you know, trying to get new customers on board with the new system as well. So that's my stance on that one.
Well, I agree with you. I think you made some great points. And I think the most significant one is, you know, they're really far behind the other two guys. And I think one advantage that they can show from their position is that they're not charging you to play games online.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know if financially, just from a business perspective on the back end here, if there is if there's a lot of pressure to charge, like if they're basically giving away too much for free by maintaining servers and things like that, by eating all that cost. You know, there are other places where they seem to be community building. There's Miiverse and whatever Miiverse might kind of turn into or evolve into with the NX. There's My Nintendo system that we just heard about, where mm-hmm. they're going to be rewarding you sure. and engaging you in that way. So, yeah. And also, I like you hinted at, both Xbox and PlayStation have built up, you know, communities that people, you know, are kind of at this point, you know, knee deep in. You know, they're kind of you've committed at some point once you've played a few games and you've gone down the achievements route and you've got a gamer score in the case of Xbox. And you know, if you ask people to kind of support a second or a third one or even migrate that over, that might be asking a little bit too much, again, when you're kind of trying to catch up. But you know, you show up and you're like, you know, here's a great multi-format game that it's just as good as, you know, hopefully on NX, just as good as what you're playing on the other systems. And also, we're not charging you to play online. I think that's a compelling message.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe they can do it, you know, in another generation or something. But for now, I think we're in agreement. Nope, not the time.
Yeah, although I would be curious to see if they did want to charge for it, what they came up with to kind of justify that, considering that they like to kind of do things differently. I'm sure it would
they
be.
Do.
You know, maybe there would be some kind of Virtual Console Classics Club or something like that that you subscribe to that kind of ties into all that. But yeah, ultimately, I think it would be a bad idea.
Yeah, maybe if they did it, you wouldn't actually pay in money. You would have to pay in, you know, hardcore gamer tiers or something like that.
Yeah.
Amiibo tiers. Next question. If you had to choose, which is more important for NX? Full cross-compatibility between console and handheld, or cutting-edge graphics?
I'm going to say full compatibility between console and handheld. As long as the console and handheld basically have Wii U-level graphics, which is, you know, no small feat for a handheld. But I think, you know, if you're just showing up with what's essentially a Nintendo-painted PlayStation 4 or Xbox One, then there's nothing really there to work with. I think, you know, you're not going to beat the other guys by mimicking them entirely. And you're not going to, you know, gain any kind of other advantage by playing it too safe. I would, of course, love to see great graphics. I'd love to have everything. But if you had to choose, if you had to settle for slightly lesser graphics in order to make that full cross-compatibility work, I think that is a compelling hook that really could, you know, maybe steal a little bit of attention away from people on the other consoles. And also, I think if they do launch with the NX as kind of a handheld console hybrid, which, you know, increasingly seems to be the case, I think that message and the kind of the magic of that concept is diluted somewhat if there's kind of a bunch of, you know, asterisks along with that. Well, only certain games work, you know, both ways or what have you. If they could somehow manage to unify all that, I think that's, you know, a more advantageous place for Nintendo to be than just saying, we just showed up and made another PlayStation 4.
Well, I understand what you're saying, but I'm going to disagree with you on this one. I'm going to say, you know, go for the full-on cutting-edge graphics. You know, I think they've proven with Wii U that, you know, when they are technologically behind the other guys, it's definitely a bad place to be. And, you know, I guess, you know, maybe part of it depends on what we mean by, you know, full cross-compatibility, or rather what the opposite of that would be. If it means that only some tiles would be cross-compatible, I'm fine with that, because I generally like to play different games on my handheld than I do on my console. So if I can only play, you know, some games only sitting on the couch playing the NX console, and there are, you know, I can't play those on the go, I'll have to resort to other things on the go that maybe aren't as visually impressive, that's fine with me, because it gives me a way to differentiate the experiences. If everything's just playable on console, you know, I'm probably going to lean towards playing everything on console that way. You know, I like having the two things to be a little bit separate. And if you can get better graphics on the console as well, even better. So that's my take on it.
See, I worry that if Nintendo goes that route of the console handheld hybrid, I mean, what you kind of just said is maybe an argument against doing that in the first place. But if they're going to commit to that, then I feel like they need to go all the way. Otherwise, if it's something people can opt in and out of, then I feel like it falls apart. And the advantage of doing it, one of the big advantages is that, you know, suddenly Nintendo, who struggled to produce enough first-party titles for two different systems at the same time to kind of keep, you know, either one of those audiences constantly satisfied throughout the year with a healthy volume of titles. You know, the advantage of doing the combined system is that, well, now you're getting basically, it's like everybody owns a 3DS and a Wii U, but it's, you know, even better than that, because we're all having the same experiences. It's all combined, and, you know, it would just help Nintendo kind of meet that the quota of games it needs to put out there to keep everyone happy. But if you start splitting it up, and it's, I mean, certainly multi-format titles, a lot of them probably wouldn't opt into that. Maybe Nintendo wouldn't even support it as well, because we saw how they didn't, you know, they were proving the gamepad.
You know, if it's like, you know, only 25% of the games are cross-compatible, then yeah, that would be awful, you know. But if it's, you know, 80% or something, I'd be totally fine with that. You know, the other week on the show, I think I made the comparison between, you know, NX and iOS, where you could think of the console as being like the iPad, where it runs, you know, all the glossier, higher res versions of everything, and then also can run, you know, all of the lower res iPhone versions. And if that was what it was like, you know, that wouldn't be a bad place to be at all.
Yeah, no, I could totally get behind that. I mean, and I think that's you're probably never going to see, or in that situation, you might not see a lot of games really made to max out the full potential of the NX console version. But you would at the very least see you know, bumps up in maybe textures and frame rates and resolution and things like that, where Nintendo could kind of build that into the operating system. They could also build it into the tools they give developers, easy ways to make their game scalable, a lot more like PC in that way.
Yeah, I suppose so.
Yeah. So yeah, I could see something like that where, you know, if you play on the console, you're going to get a bit of a better experience. But, you know, I feel like if they're going to go, you know, this hybrid route, then it has to at least be that. It can't be, you know, half the games are still just coming out for one platform or the other.
Right, totally. Okay, on to our next question. Casual audience versus core audience. Which group should Nintendo consider its most important? And I think I'm going to dive in on this one. I think there's no question you have to say that it is the core audience. You know, obviously casual has been very, very important to them. But, you know, by the very definition of a casual user, you know, they're fickle. They don't stick around. I mean, Nintendo's plan was always to take these casual gamers and turn them into core gamers. And, you know, they didn't have that much success doing that with the DS and the Wii as they would have liked. And, you know, they ended up losing these, you know, casual users to, you know, mobile devices and things of that nature. And who were they left with? They were left with, you know, the core fans. They're there through thick and thin. And, you know, they'll continue to support them even when, you know, Nintendo's a little bit on the decline and it's not the new hot thing. And, you know, then we will continue to spend hundreds of dollars on Amiibo as well. So they can get us that way, too.
And DLC as well. Yes. I think, and I think we've seen that during the Wii U, is that if it wasn't for the mega diehards, the mega loyal Nintendo fans, you know, where would they be? I mean, they've managed to somehow turn a profit, and it's all just come from squeezing more money out of the kind of core loyal audience, mm-hmm. through DLC, through Amiibo, and through you know, the kinds of titles they've been putting out. They're definitely not in a mode right now, and they haven't been for the last couple of years, where they're trying to do, you know, Wii Fit anymore or Wii Music or that kind of stuff. It just stopped working. Having said that, I mean, and so to strictly answer the question, yes, I agree with you. The core audience should always be the most important, because even though they're potentially a smaller audience, they're the engine that keeps everything running. And if you don't have them to build on and to go out and evangelize your products, you don't have anything. Mm-hmm. But I will say, you know, when people do feel slighted sometimes by Nintendo, and this happened a lot during the Wii era, where it seemed like every time Nintendo publicly gave any kind of messaging, it was really trying to, they were trying to speak over the heads of the core.
Oh,
to
yeah.
The casuals.
Remember those E3s?
Yeah. You know, and almost to the point where they're kind of talking down to, you know, traditional gaming, or at least yeah. that's how it could feel. You know, even if that slight was partly imagined. But it's nice to be recognized and to be valued, especially when you're the one spending the most money and supporting a company. But I will say that, you know, when people feel that way, they should also realize that, you know, Nintendo's, you know, biggest, most successful times in the company's history, a lot of that has come from more of a broader casual audience. You know, you think about the NES initially. Obviously, a lot of people who played the NES were core gamers or became core gamers because of the NES, like myself. But it was just kind of a pop culture thing. Everybody had to have the Nintendo. And then obviously with the Wii and the DS, a lot of the success there came from kind of the, you know, audience expanding titles Nintendo mm-hmm. focused on. And very likely here in the near future, you know, mobile gaming could generate $1 billion for them.
Yep.
And a lot of that's going to come from people who definitely are not your traditional, you know, Mario and Zelda fans.
Well, there's definitely nothing wrong with going after the core. It's just, you know, they need, or sorry, nothing wrong with going after the casual user. Just they have to be able to take those casual users and, you know, turn them into returning users and core users. And because yeah, that's what's going to, you know, keep people coming back.
Exactly, exactly. So even, I mean, just what I was trying to clarify, I guess, was that you could argue, you know, if you look at strictly financially the numbers, you could say at some points in Nintendo's history that the casual audience has been, you know, way more important and who Nintendo should have rightfully targeted. But you don't get to the casual audience without having the core audience, you know, to go through. Mm-hmm. So it has to be core first and foremost.
All right, next question. The Wii U gamepad, take it or leave it?
Take it. We've talked about this a little bit before. I'm not necessarily saying it should come back and be a part of every system, but I think it's kind of unfairly maligned. I don't think that if, you know, in a fictional world where Nintendo doesn't put the gamepad out, I don't think that necessarily means that suddenly we've got PS4 level graphics. I think it doesn't make any game worse. It only makes some games better. It's got
pretty much
every kind of functionality you could ever want built into it. And there are a few core Wii U titles that are, I mean, I can't imagine playing Splatoon without it. I can't imagine playing Mario Maker without it. And these are system-defining experiences.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, despite all the hate this thing gets, I think it's overstated. I don't think you take this thing away and suddenly Nintendo leads the market. So, yeah, I stand by the Wii U gamepad, at least for this generation.
Yeah, I don't get people's hatred of it. I mean, I guess I can sort of understand, yeah, if they hadn't done this and gone a completely different route, then, you know, this is what could have been. But, you know, that didn't happen. It's out there, and, you know, what it does is really, really good, in my opinion. I really like it. Like you said, it does pretty much everything that, you know, as a gamer you'd want it to do. So I really do think it's a very good controller. I do think that after they saw it wasn't catching on, they should have released a cheaper version of the system without it, and maybe, you know, that could have, you know, pulled in more people just by, you know, selling it for cheap with a you know, screenless controller, and that might have improved its fortunes. You know, as a standalone product, you know, or just looking at it as what it is, yeah, I think it's great.
I see that logic. I have trouble signing on to it because I think the bigger problem, or the real problem rather, was this catch-22 that they just didn't have compelling software that used the gamepad to begin with. I think, yeah, you can always sell a few more of something by doing a price cut, But in this case, you would have lost the only kind of unique defining feature that the system had.
Yeah, but no one cared about that unique defining feature.
Yeah, but if you take it away and just charge, you know, even $75 less for it or whatever, does it dramatically change the fortunes of the Wii U? Or does it just make it seem less interesting?
I think it makes it an easier buy for a lot of people.
Well, I guess if you're talking especially about a more casual audience or younger audience, but even a core audience maybe who might say, okay, I like Mario enough. I'd play the next Mario game, but it's not worth, you know, the full cost of a Wii U for me. Maybe that would have made the difference. But ultimately, I feel like it's kind of, you know, you see this kind of debate pop up every now and again, and it can get pretty heated. I guess my point on it or my position on it is it's kind of the wrong debate. I feel like the debate here was that Nintendo, or the real issue is that Nintendo just dropped the ball so hard for the first 2 years, basically, on putting out anything that really proved the worth of the gamepad.
Well, I still think there are very few games that, you know, prove it as like an awesome innovator that the Wii Remote was. And, you know, it's just not on that level. And that's why I figure there could have been, you know, a different, more affordable bundle that could have just, you know, tried to grow the audience in that way. And like I keep saying, just as a controller, I think it's great. Who cares if it's the, you know, the next big innovative thing? It really isn't, but it's, you know, it still does a lot of cool things that I love as a gamer.
Yeah, yeah. No, back to the original question, I do stand by it. But just one more little argument from my side is I wonder if a year in, after this thing's kind of tanking, if they start splitting the audience between people who have gamepads and who don't have gamepads, I wonder if we even get a Splatoon. Or do we even get a Mario Maker, at least in the forms that we got them? You know what I mean?
Well, here's the thing, is that it's not like you have to worry about whether things are going to get third-party support or not, because there are no third parties. It's only Nintendo. So as long as Nintendo sticks to its guns and tries to still prove its worth and tries to still, you know, make it viable and just, you know, doesn't shy away from that, then there's no problem.
Well, at the end of the day, though, they're facing the same kind of situation a third party would. If you're looking at a split user base and you're making business decisions based on who has what hardware, I mean, they're still going to run up against that same problem. At the very least, they'd have to decide on, you know, maybe we limit the game. It doesn't rely on the gamepad as heavily as it would have, but we put in like a gamepad mode for those that do have it.
Well, there are a lot of games that really don't rely on it that much, it seems.
No, I mean, there aren't. But, I mean, like I said, Splatoon, Mario Maker, there are
a small handful
of games. And it just so happens that those are, like, the games most worth owning, you know, the system for. Anyway.
Yeah, if they had left it out, you know, had left that gamepad functionality, it would have been a darn shame, which is among the reasons why I say, yeah, definitely take it. Great controller.
Yeah.
Along those lines, next question. What is the best controller Nintendo has ever made?
This is a rough one, but I'll tell you the first one that came to mind and the one I eventually ended up going with was the Super NES gamepad.
Ha ha!
And the reason is, of course, you can't play 3D games with it. But as far as 2D gaming goes, it was pretty much perfect. I like the feel of it, the weight of it, the way the shoulder buttons feel. It introduced the shoulder buttons. So, I'd go with that one.
I think I will also go with that one. I mean, I kind of want to go with the NES controller because you introduced the D-pad and, you know, that whole configuration. But the other Super Nintendo, you know, it stepped it up and improved upon that. So I think that one is my favorite. You know, I had a lot of considerations for this. You know, the N64 one, I'm like, nah, it's just too weird.
That those whole three prongs.
You know, the GameCube one is really good, but I'm not a fan of the weirdly shaped buttons myself. And then part of me thought, well, the Wii U gamepad has just about everything. So that's a strong contender as well. But in the end, I'm going on the same path as you and saying Super NES.
The only thing I had against the Wii U gamepad and why I didn't choose it, because like you said, it feels pretty good. It's got everything you'd want in it.
It's enormous.
Yeah, it's a little bit big. I mean, if you're talking about just kicking back on the couch. And actually, I certainly wouldn't consider this to be my favorite controller, but I did want to give a shout out to specifically using the Wii Remote held sideways, NES style. For some reason, the smaller size of the buttons and the way it just fits in my hand, I really enjoy playing Mario Maker and a bunch of virtual console titles like that.
All right, fair enough. Okay, now comes the lightning round. The question is 3D or 2D? Which do you prefer for Mario, Zelda, and Metroid?
Really quickly, Mario, today I would prefer 3D. My favorite Mario of all time, if I had to pick, would be Super Mario World, which is 2D. Wait, what did I say initially, 2D or 3D?
You said today would be 3D.
Okay, yeah, okay. So
and I'm going the same thing. I'm also saying 3D for Mario because my favorite is Galaxy. And all the 3D Marios lately, I think, have been fantastic, and I think better than the 2D Marios. But I also agree, World is one of my favorites, but these days, 3D.
Yeah, I trust the 3D team more than I trust the 2D team, mostly just because they've been, churning out new Super Mario Brothers titles for so long, I kind of got burnt out on them.
So Zelda.
Zelda, I would go 3D, which is tough because I enjoyed A Link Between Worlds so much. But if I had to pick, yeah, 3D.
Man, that's a really hard one for me. I think I'm going to side with 2D because I think you can sort of take in more all at once. I feel like it's easier just a little bit to integrate action with puzzles in a 2D top-down view that you don't necessarily get in 3D, but I love them both, so it's a really, really hard decision. But I guess I'm going to go 2D.
I think a lot of the action and a lot of even some of the puzzles naturally work better in 2D, but the reason I picked 3D is because I think the most kind of core appeal of the Zelda series to me is that sense of exploration and discovery and wonder. And I feel like that comes across better when you're exploring an environment, from within that environment.
I think it probably does. It's more immersive.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, it's a toughie.
Metroid for me was easy because even though I love the Prime series, I've never been as big of a fan of it as most people. And my favorite my favorite Metroid games are all 2D. So 2D for Metroid.
I'm also going 2D, thanks to Super Metroid and Zero Mission. So 2D Metroid for me as well.
Yep.
Okay, next. What is Nintendo's most important franchise?
I would say Super Mario Brothers. And I think you could argue that, certain series like Mario Kart sell more. You can also look at some of the more casual Mii titles that really kind of, became pop culture icons and reached potentially bigger audiences. But I feel like at the end of the day, Mario is Nintendo's Mickey Mouse. He's synonymous with platformers, and he means more to Nintendo's brand identity than any other one Nintendo franchise. So I feel like, if Nintendo had to have one franchise vital and strong always, I feel like it's Mario.
I pretty much agree with you. I was going to take more of a cop-out answer, and I'm just going to say Mario. I wasn't going to say, the Super Mario series. I'm just going to say, Mario on the whole, because he pretty much does it all. It kind of encompasses, anything they want to do. They want to do RPGs, boom, you got Mario. You want to do platformers, you got Mario. You want to do sports, you got Mario. So, yeah, there's no question it's Mario. As much as I, love, giant gorillas and sword swinging dudes in hats and space bounty hunters and everybody else in Smash Brothers. But, you wouldn't have any of that really without Mario. And like I said, I feel like I'm kind of cheating by trying to say the whole Mario brand, but that's my pick anyway.
Well, I feel comfortable just narrowing it. I mean, I totally agree with you, but I also feel more comfortable narrowing it down to platformers because I feel like it's like the difference between watching Michael Jordan play basketball versus just watching him as a celebrity kind of endorse a bunch of stuff. I think
playing golf,
yeah, or baseball. I think when you see a Mario platformer, usually it's watching video game at its highest art. I mean, it is a Mario platformer is as tuned and perfected as anything else in gaming, and it really shows off how great gaming can be on just the most fundamental levels. Even if it's not wowing you with new tech or crazy things, it's just it's just finely tuned game making. So I feel like that sets a tone that is also kind of important in a lot of other maybe less obvious ways.
I guess if I were forced to narrow it down, I would do the same thing. But I'll just, if you're not holding a weapon to my head, Mario was a hole, for sure. Next up, what should Nintendo's stance be on censorship during localization? Should games ever be censored while they're being localized?
Well, we just saw a big example of this recently with people noticing that some of the skimpier costumes in Fatal Frame Maiden of Blackwater and in Xenoblade Chronicles X had been changed.
Yeah, as
changed.
We talked about in our last couple episodes.
Yeah, for Western markets. I would say, well, here's I have an answer, but here I kind of have a question first. What do we necessarily define as censored? Because stuff changes in localization all the time, usually to kind of better suit each region's humor or better reflect, you know, each culture. You could argue some of these things that we would traditionally define as censorship are also kind of done to better reflect each culture.
You know, technically censorship is, you know, anything that is changed or, you know, sort of, you know, blocked by, you know, an outside entity. You know, in these cases that we're talking about with Nintendo, it's, you know, the publisher, I guess, you know, changing, you know, the developer's original intent. And, I, you know, I'd like to think that most of the time in localization, you are trying to preserve that intent. I mean, I know the people I've talked to in localization, that's one of their main goals. They want to preserve the original work and, you know, try to keep as true the original as they can. And, you know, the question, you know, that I posed was, should games ever be censored during localization? And, you know, there are probably, you know, times where you, where it would be okay and you would want to do it. But, you know, in these instances, the stuff that's popped up recently, you know, I don't think so. I don't like it. I don't think it's a good thing. I like to keep it as true to the original as you can in the content in all forms. As I said last week, if there is content that's good enough for one region, it should be good enough for all regions. And, you know, if they're planning that out, they should figure that out in advance and they should say, oh, you know, we should go with something that'll fly in all territories so someone isn't missing out on the content, isn't missing out on, you know, the way the work was originally done. So with a little asterisk that there might be, you know, some situations that are just, you know, too far removed from, you know, what's acceptable, I would say, no, don't censor this stuff during localization.
I agree. I think the bottom line is, well, I guess the bottom line is if it's not appropriate for all cultures, you just shouldn't do it in the first place. Now, of course, there is something that is, I mean, you do run up against things that just culturally are more accepted or mean something different. So, you know, maybe I can't make such a broad statement, but, you know, I guess here what we've been talking about is more scantily clad costumes, which in the ultimate, you know, gameplay experience is probably trivial. We've also seen in the past, even as far back as the NES, some religious iconography
iconography. Yes.
There you, that's the word I'm looking for. Removed.
Yeah. Some of the NES stuff was really silly. Like, you know, taking out Hitler.
Yeah.
From Bionic Commando, for example.
Violence as well. I mean, if you lived in Europe and you played Contra, the Contra games on the NES, or
oh,
even
that's right. I was
even
just thinking about
bit,
that.
It was, they were all the humans were replaced by robots.
Yeah.
They didn't think it was okay to shoot, you know, sprite humans, but robots were fine.
Well, they were aliens. They weren't even, I mean, I forget if it was the, I mean, the aliens are shooting the humans and the humans were changed into robots. It's not like, you know, it was humans murdering other humans in the game. It was, you know, humans fighting aliens and aliens shooting you back. That, yeah, that was really dumb too.
But the bottom line is, and I think this is what you're getting at from a user's perspective, is anytime you feel like something was taken out or altered, there's always that lingering kind of feeling that you got something that was lesser than what other people got, even if it
right.
is something totally trivial. So, you know, I don't think Nintendo or game developers should put themselves in a position where users can feel that way.
Mm-hmm. Okay, time for the final question. Should Nintendo go third party? And the answer is no. That would be suicide.
Absolutely never. Anybody, whether you're an investor or, you know, a hater or an honest Nintendo fan, anybody calling for Nintendo to ever go third party just doesn't understand Nintendo, doesn't understand the way it goes about its business, doesn't understand what makes Nintendo special. I mean, Nintendo's, think about all the innovations, the hardware innovations Nintendo has brought that has in turn spurred software innovations.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, play of the PlayStation and the Xbox in its current forms would look radically different if Nintendo had never been around, if they would even be around today at all. I mean, Nintendo brought us, whether they invented the technology or just popularized it, I mean, you know, shoulder buttons, I mean, the list goes on and on, you know, motion control, touchscreen gaming, you know, way before smartphones was on, you know, Nintendo platforms. So the idea that they should just stop cranking out new ideas and just make games for PlayStation not only would take away probably the most influential force for innovation in the industry, but also it would kind of really diminish the brand and the community that Nintendo builds up around its platforms. You know, I think when you invest in a Nintendo system, you're investing in a very specific kind of experience, and you're in turn kind of a very specific kind of gamer who through this community are you know, playing with and connecting with other types of gamers like you. And I think one of the things that we saw when Sega pulled out of making consoles was that a lot of what seemed to make Sega special when all of that stuff was pulled together on their platform really diminished when it was kind of pulled thin across everything else, and you really lost kind of that Sega identity and that Sega community. And I'd hate to see that go away with Nintendo. So no, they should absolutely never ever go third party.
Yeah, I really can't put any better myself, so I think we'll just wrap it up here. That covers our big topic of the Nintendo burning questions for today. Yeah, maybe we'll revisit this topic sometime down the road if we get more questions. Hey, if people have questions they want to ask us, they should send them in. Maybe we will tackle those in another episode down the road. But this does it for today's episode. Next week we'll have all sorts of fun stuff to talk about coming out of the Nintendo Direct. But for now, we will leave you with a dramatic reading, this time from the back of the box of the Game Boy game Primal Rage. Earth-shaking carnage. Select one of seven ferocious dinosaurs, then pound your opponents into submission as you battle for Earth domination. Blizzard's freeze breath and ice geyser fighting moves stop you cold just before his mega punch hammers you senseless. Diablo's Inferno Flash cooks up a firestorm in one dino barbecuing breath, and the foul, disgusting chaos dazes you with an abundant supply of power puke, farts of fury, and flying butt slams. Armadon's Gut Gouger and Gut Fling, Sauron's Cranium Crusher, and Talon's Face Ripper. Every original arcade fighting and fatality move is at your fingertips. Get ready to rage.
That sounds like the grossest thing ever. Like the game is something I don't want to step into because it's icky.
The good news is that it was a Game Boy game and it was all in black and white. You couldn't have any idea what was going on. So.
All right, well, that's it for this week. As always, you can find us at powerprospod@podbean.com, and you can follow us at powerprospod on both Facebook and Twitter. You can also follow The Hoff on Twitter @ChrisTheHoff, and I'm @ChrisSlate. Hoff also has a really cool blog called Still Playing with Power, and you can find it at christhehoff.tumblr.com. And like Hoff said, if you want to email us your burning questions, or if you want to email us for any other reason, you can send those to us at powerprospod@gmail.com. And hey, if you like the podcast, we always appreciate it if you can take a second to drop by iTunes and let us know.
Thanks for listening, everybody. For myself, Chris Slate.
See ya.
And our anime-loving friend, Otacon.
You can kiss your butt goodbye.
We will see you next time.